On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Bill Gates and Eli Broad, mega billionaires and business legends, are shouting now that America must fix its education system or fail in global competition. The heat is on. No Child Left Behind only goes so far. Now some Democrats are turning their eye on teachers. Time to weed out the bad and reward the good like never before, they say. Tenure is under the microscope. Sacred cows may be gored. Up next on Point, the great debate on American education's next chapter with billionaire Eli Broad, a top teachers union, and a new call for extreme makeover in America's schools. Joining me first today in the studio is Thomas Tom Kane, professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He's co-author of a head-turning new study that calls for radical reform of teacher tenure, certification, and pay. The study comes from the Brookings Institution and the Hamilton Project, the brainchild of Wall Street baron and Clinton-era Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin. Tom Kane, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
So the headline we're reading is, here's the news, get rid of bad teachers and reward good ones. Why this focus and why these measures?
Well, education reform is a futile exercise unless you have the right people in front of the classroom. So shrinking class size, changing the curriculum, higher standards, all of that is meaningless unless you have the right people teaching. The problem is we've been going about it the wrong way, that traditionally policymakers, and this is reflected in the No Child Left Behind Act, have tried to raise the quality of the teaching force by erecting ever higher hurdles, so requiring people to pass a test.
The certification hurdles.
Right. Mm-hmm. Requiring them to take courses, specific set of courses to prepare for teaching.
How's that working?
Well, what we know, but then once people are hired, there's very little screening. What we've learned is that, you know, that sort of system only makes sense if the hurdles that we erect help you identify the more effective teachers, and if once people are on the job, school districts don't learn anything more about who the effective teachers are.
Can't just hire them and forget about them in the classroom.
Right. And neither one of those premises seems to be true. So there are very little, if any, differences in student achievement in classrooms taught by traditionally certified teachers, in classrooms taught by alternatively certified teachers or even uncertified teachers.
You mean the certification doesn't seem to matter?
Well, it seems to matter very little there. Now, I'm not saying that teachers don't matter. Teachers matter a lot. So among teachers who are certified, they're dramatically more effective teachers and not-so-effective teachers, and among the alternatively certified, there are similar differences.
Or uncertified. And you're saying drop certification necessarily as a prerequisite for teaching. You're saying hold off on tenure, don't give it so easily, make it much more difficult to get that, and then pay the best teachers, those with the best track record, more overtime to teach the kids who need it most. How much leverage is there in a teacher? I mean, how much difference can it make? You see the scale of the education challenge we seem to have in this country is weeding out and pumping up the bad teachers and pumping up the good ones going to do it. How much leverage is in that particular, quadrant?
So education professionals are always frustrated that there are lots of armchair quarterbacks out there. Unlike health, unlike foreign policy, everybody feels entitled to have an opinion on education policy because everybody's been through a school. On this one issue of whether teachers matter, the conventional wisdom is backed up by the evidence. So everybody can tell a story about how a particular teacher made a huge difference for them in their career.
Anecdotal.
Right. But it turns out that when you look at the statistics, you see that same fact reflected in the data, that there's a wide range in the degree to which students who enter classrooms similarly but were assigned to different teachers, a wide range in the degree to which they've gain performance over the course of the year.
You've looked at Los Angeles figures on exactly that question.
Yes. And so what we learned was having a top quartile teacher, so having a teacher in the top 25 percent of teachers versus having a teacher in the bottom quartile, meant that you moved up 10 percentile points on average in just 1 year. The average student in the class moved up 10 percentile
points. On test performance, 10% in 1 year. That's huge.
Right. Now, just to give you a sense of how huge that is, the racial achievement gap is about 34 percentile
between
points.
What and what?
You know,
This is blacks and Hispanics and whites, something?
Yes, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes, so between whites and African-Americans,
okay. The
gap is about, for the average white and the average African-American, the gap is about 34
test
percentile
scores.
Points.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now,
it's huge.
So what we're saying is if those differences were to persist after 3 or 4 years of having a top quartile teacher as opposed to a bottom quartile teacher would be enough to close the racial achievement gap. That's how important teachers are for this sort of policy.
Now, that's gigantic.
Now, in comparison, there was a careful study in Tennessee of what's the effect of shrinking class size.
Right.
And what they found was shrinking class size from 22 students to 16 students.
Okay.
Led to about a 5 percentile point increase in performance.
In a single year?
In a single year.
So
not in a single year. Over the course of kindergarten through third grade.
Mm-hmm.
So if we shrink your class size for those 4 years, kindergarten through mm-hmm. third grade, we move you up 5 percentile points.
So that's a fraction of the top teacher payoff if you can get a top teacher.
But it's also much more expensive because mm-hmm. shrinking from 22 to 16 represents a 38% increase in teacher salary expenditures.
Bob Rubin, with the Hamilton Project, who's behind this through the Brookings Institution, a moderate Democrat, but a Democrat. Democrats have traditionally sort of gone to bed and woken up with the teachers' unions. Are the teachers' unions ever going to sign off on this? Are Democratic presidential candidates, for example, who Eli Broad, who we're going to hear from in a minute, is pushing to do more on education, are they going to embrace this when you start chipping away at the front end of tenure?
Well, I would argue the important thing to emphasize is we're not talking about doing away with tenure. Actually, I think that sort of job security could be an important perk that we could use to lure the best people into what is a very tough profession. What we're talking about, though, is just making tenure a serious hurdle. So creating systems for evaluating teachers during their first couple of years on the job, and then making tenure conditional on the performance in the first couple of years on the job. Right now, there's very little selection. So all the selection...
Almost automatic once you're in lifetime employment.
Right. Guarantee. So we focus on, in the current system, we focus our selectivity on recruitment, and we focus very little selection on trying to retain the best teachers after 2 or 3 years. Ironically, most districts could make these decisions now under collective bargaining agreements.
And just don't. Tom Kane, hold the thought. He's co-author of a study that's really turning heads on an education push focused on teachers. We'll hear in a moment from Eli Broad, the billionaire who's pushing big reform, not incremental, please. But let's go to the teachers' union first. Joining us from Washington, D.C., Antonia Cortez, Executive Vice President of the American Federation of Teachers. They represent more than 1 million educators nationwide. Antonia Cortez, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
This proposal is getting a lot of attention and a lot of ink, and it chips away at that tenure track that most of your union members, no doubt, are on. Are you for it, against it? Is it outrageous? Would you consider it?
Well, I think that I heard Mr. Kane say very clearly that they were not looking to eliminate tenure. And in that framework, I think I'm in agreement with him that there is a lot that could be done to raise the standards for granting tenure.
So you'd support making it tougher?
Well, making it more evaluative and more systematic.
And the weeding out that would come from that evaluation.
Right now it lies in the hands of administrators to make that decision. And I think as a teachers' union, we're saying that we think that on in that equation, or maybe replacing it, ought to be peer assistance and review. That one way of professionalizing teaching is to have teachers decide who should be in the classroom and who should be granted tenure.
What about throwing out teacher certification as a requirement?
Certainly not on the basis of this study. This only looked at one city in California and drew conclusions about teachers' performance based on whether they were certified or not. I think that's a very narrow base to make that conclusion. The other thing is that, you know, every profession has some minimum standard to get into it. And even cosmetology, lawyers have to pass the bar. And I don't think that the first day a lawyer is on the job that someone feels that they are ready to go to the Supreme Court and argue a case. That's very true for first-year teachers. They need a lot of support. They need support from their colleagues. They need to see modeling done.
We've been joined by Antonia Cortese. She's Executive Vice President of the American Federation of Teachers, and Thomas Kane at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, co-author of a big new report saying, let's move on this front. Tom Kane, Antonia says, hey, we're open to talking about this. Let's look at it.
The only issue I would disagree with Antonia about is, or just a distinction I would want to make, is we're not saying that first-year teachers don't need a lot of support in figuring out what to do in the classroom.
Sure.
Because, you know, I've not taught at K-12, but as a first-year assistant professor, I certainly struggled.
Who wouldn't?
But the point is that the important distinction is between pre-service and in-service training. So can you prepare somebody for that experience before they walk into a classroom, or do you provide support once they're in the crucible? And we're spending an awful lot of resources on having people go through teacher training programs before they get in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying stop spending so much there, spend more once and transfer those resources into supporting new teachers in the classroom, but then
evaluate and weed.
Them, right. Evaluate and weed, because people don't know whether they're going to succeed there or not until they're there.
And don't hand out tenure if it doesn't look like they're going to succeed. Antonia Cortese, I want to get your response on that, but first, if I may, I want to bring one more voice into this conversation, and it's a big one in the election, the presidential election campaign season this year and in the months ahead. Eli Broad joins us from Los Angeles. He's, a billionaire, a home builder who has teamed up with Microsoft's Bill Gates to put education high on the agenda of the 08 campaign season. Eli Broad, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
You and Bill Gates are laying down $60 million on this single issue, Ed in 08, as in education in 08. In the campaign, you said, enough with incremental reform. We need bigger stuff to happen. What are you looking for, Eli Broad?
Well, we're looking for to, frankly, awaken the American people, to have them understand that we've got to reform public education. We're also want all of the candidates to talk about three specific things and not talk about the pablum of simply we need better schools and better teachers. And those three things are strong American standards. It's more time, more learning time, more time, a longer school day, a longer school year, similar to other nations we're competing with.
Right.
And lastly, better teachers, and get better teachers by offering the superior ones incentives and offering differential pay to those teachers that have math and science majors that we can't get any other way, and offer differential pay for those that go into the most challenging schools.
You and Bill Gates, billionaires, so frustrated by the pace of change in American reform that you've now come out with tens of millions to push this in this campaign. Why do you think it's so tough to get this done? You are a good buddy of Bill Clinton. He was president for 8 years, and it didn't happen.
Well, it is tough. It is tough. Look, if you go back 26 years to a nation at risk, you say, what's happened those 26 years? I don't think student achievement has moved hardly at all. The gap between income and ethnic groups is not narrowed, but yet spending in real dollars has gone up some almost 70%. So we've got to change the way education works in America.
Has No Child Left Behind begun to swing into effective action on the strong standards piece of this, Eli Brown?
Well, we think No Child Left Behind is very positive, and I can't speak for our foundations because our foundations don't get involved in legislation, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But as a citizen, I believe No Child Left Behind needs to be reauthorized and needs to be strengthened.
It's up for reauthorization now. The competitiveness issue, I presume, is what you're looking at foremost. Is that what's driving you?
Oh,
are you and Bill Gates worried
that
we have or will fall behind?
Well, I think we're concerned with the fact that if we don't have a better workforce in America, whether they're prepared for work or college properly, our standard of living is going to go down. In our cities, when we have all these dropouts, crime can only go up. The cost of society will be great. We're going to reduce the already smaller middle class that we have, which I think is the backbone of our democracy. And I think the only answer to all of this is to reform and improve public education in America.
So you're speaking to presidential candidates in both parties with a lot of money that says we're going to raise a big expensive megaphone here to push this into the campaign. Are you prepared to speak right here, right now, to the teachers' union? Antonia Cortez is with us. She's with the American Federation of Teachers. Do you see the teachers' unions, Eli Brode, as having been, a positive influence on the reform effort?
Well, frankly, it varies. I think you've got some teachers' union leaders in various parts of America that are more progressive than others. For example, in Denver, Colorado, we work with the head of that teachers' union, the superintendent and the mayor, and they went ahead with something called ProComp, professional compensation, which offers incentives to teachers that get superior results.
And that's one piece of what Tom Kaine's proposing as well. Antonia Cortez at the teachers' union, are you happy to see Bill Gates and Eli Brode swinging in here with their big money to push education in the presidential campaign?
Well, I think it's very important to America's future that education is certainly high on all the candidates' agenda. We know that we have a high dropout problem in our urban centers, that we don't have enough qualified teachers in our urban centers, but we also know that we could get them there if we offered the kind of incentives, and I don't mean just money, but the kind of conditions that one would want to teach under, which means being safe, having orderly schools, enough materials, and a good physical plant to work in. And so I think there are solutions. I don't know that we'd all come up with the same solutions, but there are solutions.
Big concern here. Lots of urgency, Eli Brode and Bill Gates putting forward. Antonia Cortez from the Teachers Union is with us, and Tom Kaine, he's proposing reforms. I want to hear from our listeners as well. After all, they're out there living this. Let's go to Kate in Southampton, New York. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm actually a student right now in high school, so I kind of know what you guys are talking about.
Why aren't you in class, Kate?
I actually have to go get a prom dress.
Okay, great. Okay, so you hear the conversation. What do you think? Are people on the right beam here?
Well, I think that they definitely are. I mean, I take a lot of AP classes, and a lot of my teachers are very highly qualified, and they've had tenure for a while. And I have some teachers who know exactly what they're talking about, and they can get, you know, even average students 4s and 5s on APs. And then I've got teachers who have been teaching for 11, 15 years, and they just can't get anything higher than a 2, for the past, 6 or 7 years.
So you're the student, and you say, please weed them out so we have effective instruction from the front of the classroom.
Exactly, because these test scores are counting so much more with the, the burdens placed by No Child Left Behind, and when people are applying to more selective schools that are looking at so much more now.
So there's a vote straight from the classroom. Good luck with the prom dress, Kate. Thanks for calling. Let's get one more from Hamilton, Massachusetts. Ruth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I work in public education, and I'm not out getting a prom dress, but I'm taking my son to the doctor, and that's why
yep.
I'm listening right now.
Good. We're glad you're listening. Okay.
And I have to say that, once again, here are people who are not in the classroom making these grand claims, and I'm so tired of teachers being the scapegoats of society. Until we address the problems of society in terms of poverty and the income disparity, we are going to continue to be frustrated by the lack of achievement of certain population groups. And you can see, there is a
yep.
really strong correlation between parental income and mm-hmm. scores on the SATs.
Mm-hmm. So don't blame it all.
What are we really measuring? And when you look at the MCAS scores in Massachusetts by town, you're looking at a socioeconomic map of the state. And
find the income, find the parallel score.
I'm sorry?
You find the income, and you're going to have a pretty
yes.
good idea where the score is going to be, you're
Precisely.
Saying.
Precisely. And before I get accused of, quote-unquote, giving up on, you know, children that live in poverty, I think what we really have to do is create almost 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week centers that not only include schools but also include the other social services that people who live with tremendous problems need in order to survive.
Ruth, we hear that loud and clear. Let me put it to my guest, if I may, and Eli Broad, let me start with you. Ruth saying, you know, this narrow focus on the school, on the classroom, way too narrow. If we don't solve the bigger problems in this society, you're never going to get the kind of achievement you want in the schoolhouse.
Well, we've got to solve the bigger problems. There's no question about that. But at the same time, we can't say we can't get the job done. We've got to get our best teachers in the most challenging schools. We've got to get our best principals into the toughest schools. We've got to incent them to do the best job they can with the students that they have.
Tom Kane, Ruth says, don't scapegoat teachers. Is that what you're doing here?
We're trying not to scapegoat teachers, and I don't think that's what we're doing. Even if you look at this at the kids attending the same school, so from the same neighborhoods
okay.
with the same income, the same racial, ethnic backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
there are huge differences between the achievement of similar kids at the end of the year when they were assigned to one teacher versus another.
Mm-hmm.
So teachers matter, and it's not just income and race that's driving these things. And what we're saying is, look, we've known for years that teachers matter. It's time that we start to act on it, to say, okay, let's be serious about evaluating teachers' effectiveness during their first couple of years on the job. Let's not make tenure sort of an automatic thing that happens if you've been able to stay on the job for
mm-hmm.
2 or 3 years, and let's make it a serious review.
And when you find the best ones, pay them maybe $15,000 a year
right.
to go into the toughest schools and use that talent they've got. Let's go to Ames, Iowa, and Susan. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to reiterate that really there should be kind of annual reviews. I've heard someone say that. I'm in the medical profession, and every year, you know, each individual has to go through a whole list of criteria and be checked off. Are you doing this? How is this going? You know, and it goes through by your supervisors, and you're approved as to whether you pass for your merit increase.
Mm-hmm. So the same thing in the schoolhouse, you say, the same thing for teachers, please.
Yes, it should be whether you're a first-year, you know, teacher or whether you have 25 years of experience.
Susan, thanks very much for that and for your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Antonia Cortez, what about it? Lifelong assessment and consequences for teachers? Or is this, I mean, we love the good work teachers do. I don't mean to suggest anything else here. Thank God they're out there doing it. But you hear the call for top quality, please, and for assessment, and Susan says, right on going, right throughout their career with consequences.
Well, I can't think of a place across the country that doesn't have some kind of evaluate system for teachers and annual reviews. I think the question is, what do they look like, and what do the reviews actually tell us? I think the previous caller hit on some very important things. We know what it takes to overcome the effects of poverty. It takes a preschool program so kids get a good head start. We know that if We don't have a preschool program. The vocabulary is nowhere near what a middle-class vocabulary is. We know they need a good, rich curriculum and high expectations. We know that they need good schools that have a proper order, that they can be safe in. So we know the things. They take money.
But with all that, are you ducking the individual teacher's responsibility? Are you trying to push that down the scale of priorities here?
Well, yes and no. I think that if you don't have textbooks in your classroom, it's hard to judge that that's a teacher's fault. And I think that if you have children who come to school without the advantages of other kids, and then you compare those kids' achievement, I think that's unfair. But the issue really is we have half of our teachers leaving within the first 5 years. So this is not a group of people. This is not a situation where we have a group of people knocking on the door to get in to teach in our urban district.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to offer a more attractive package. And part of that is salary, but the other part has to do with all the things that I've mentioned. So, you know, in Baltimore, for instance, we only have over half of the teachers in Baltimore are not even highly qualified under NCLB. Now, is that the teacher's fault? No, that's the fault of not being able to recruit people and not being able to retain them. So I think we should focus in on the broader picture of what it takes to get effective teachers into our schools. And first we got to get them out of the teacher training institutions and have them decide they want to go into teaching.
Right.
And once they get into teaching, to stay in teaching.
So get them attracted in.
With a lot of professional development.
Right, and support Eli Brode. You're listening along here. You're looking to put a hot poker behind the whole country and the candidates in particular on this subject of reform. We just got you for another half minute. What's your message to our listeners today? If there's a presidential candidate in his SUV listening in, what do you want to tell the country and those candidates about the urgency of this issue, Mr. Brode?
Well, I would ask the candidates where they are on strong American standards. Where are they on a longer school day and a longer school year so our children get the same number of academic hours they get in other countries? Where are they on better teachers and incentives for teachers? Where are they on the issue of differential pay to get our best teachers into the toughest schools and get math and science majors teaching?
That's a pretty good list.
And in general, our nation's becoming less and less competitive. And our way of life is really at stake here.
Eli Brode talking about longer school days, strong standards, and he said, better teachers. I want to turn to Denver, Colorado right now, and Lori Nazarino. She's a fifth grade science teacher at Barnum Elementary School, part of the Denver public school system. She taught for 19 years in the Miami-Dade Public School District. She's part of a panel of teachers, 18 top teachers, that produced a report recently for the Center for Teaching Quality out of North Carolina, saying that teachers should be evaluated not just at the beginning, but right on through, and their pay should depend not on how long they've worked, but on how well they teach. Lori Nazarino, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Are your fellow teachers throwing, you know, stones at you or roses?
Well, some of both. I happen to be in Denver that I'd like to thank Mr. Brode for mentioning and supporting the ProComp pay system here in Denver. And so in terms of people being accustomed to the concept of differentiated pay and being rewarded for additional responsibilities and meeting student growth objectives, the folks here in Denver are pretty accustomed to the concept. So.
But you know teachers around the country. You've worked around the country. Do you think this would slide without, you know, riots into most school districts? Or are teachers accustomed to that stair step based on seniority, pay me for my years, not for my quality, please?
Well, I know from my perspective that I intentionally selected Denver because of its pro-comp pay system. Because when I looked at their plan, I knew that the things that they asked of an accomplished teacher are the things that I did already. So in in Miami, we didn't necessarily, because we didn't have a professional compensation system, I did not necessarily, I was not necessarily compensated or rewarded for doing the additional things that a professional would do. I did it because I wanted to improve my practice, I wanted to improve student learning, and in some cases there were rewards for that, but in other cases there weren't. I do believe that quite a few folks will be will be hesitant about differentiated pay only because they, not only because, but a major reason is not necessarily trusting or having faith in the evaluation systems that are going to be used. I've heard before now some talk about teacher evaluation, and everywhere I've been and everyone I've talked to does have a regular evaluation system. But even from Miami to Denver, to pretty large urban districts, the evaluation system varies so greatly in terms of what it looks at, how it's done.
So people are really going to want reassurance that it's a good quality evaluation, especially when it's going right to their paycheck. Tom Kane, what about this issue of ongoing evaluation and tying teacher pay directly to how well they do in that evaluation? Could it work nationally? Should it?
It's true that many districts, in fact, probably most districts, have some sort of evaluation tool. The problem is almost everybody gets a satisfactory, and that there's very little attempt to differentiate among the very top and the underperforming. And our proposal would force that on systems to say, okay, look, we don't care how you do it. As long as you can rate effectiveness in the by quartile and be able to identify the top 25%, the middle 50, and the bottom 25%, and that a big part of that could be based on growth in student test scores. So not just how your kids do at the end of the year, but how their performance changed over the course of the year. And so the issue has not been are we evaluating. The issue is have we been making important distinctions? And I'd argue that in most cases, evaluation has been sort of an empty exercise.
Here's your satisfactory grade, and off you go. Lori, if districts really came in there with a tough evaluation system, rigorous, that really drew distinctions and then had consequences tied to them, do you think that would make teaching a more or less attractive career, profession?
I think we need to be careful in how we word that, because that had a whole lot of words around a lot of sticks to beat people over the head.
Yeah.
And teaching and working with children and students is so much more complex than what can be captured on a single day or 3 days on a particular test. There are all kinds of issues around what about all of those other areas that aren't tested? What about all of the other teachers who contribute to test scores but are not directly assigned to those students?
Mm-hmm.
I am, you know, again, there was a huge difference between my evaluation system in Miami and the evaluation system that I have here in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
I think any good, conscientious, professional teacher who can have areas, and we all have areas that we can improve, if we can have those honestly evaluated and assessed in multiple ways beyond a single test, because a test just gives us a snapshot on a day.
Right.
Our kids deserve a full-color movie assessment of how they're doing and how they're performing. But if I can get honest feedback on the things that I'm strong in, my areas of challenge, how I can improve those areas and be given the resources to improve in those areas, I'm open to it. I'm always seeking ways to improve my practice.
Lori Nazarino in Denver, Colorado, we're grateful to you for being with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Natalie's calling from Newington, Connecticut. Natalie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. What do you know, Natalie?
I am a teacher in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And I actually, I'm just going to take you off speaker. I was listening through the phone.
Yeah.
I am actually for not having teachers tenured.
No tenure? You're a teacher and you say do away with tenure? Why?
because I know within the system that I work in, there are teachers there that have been teaching for way too long that should not be there anymore.
And they stay just because they've got that job guarantee, and that's a lot to give up in this country.
It is, because, like you said, the pay scale goes up the longer that you've been there. Now, I can say that with the certainty that I would be okay, because I know that I do my job and I do it well. And I also wanted to say, in Connecticut, in order for a teacher to retire, we have to work 35 years.
Yeah.
So if you start teaching when you're 25 years old, you're not retiring until you're 60. And there's two things that need to be considered with that. When you're a 25-year-old, you are not the same person that you are when you are a 60-year-old.
That's for sure.
And the children, they change when the
culture.
The culture, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not the same as they were 25 years ago, whether you started when you were 25 or when you're 60.
So locking in may not be the best thing to do. It may not be where you ought to be 30 years on.
It's not. I definitely don't think that it is. And if that's where you are and you don't want to be there, then you shouldn't be there.
And yet people want to make careers. Natalie, thanks for your call. Let's get one from Texas, Woodlands, Texas. Daryl, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What do you know?
I just had a few comments in regard to the sort of extreme makeover of education that we've been on about. And ties in with the last call to an extent of the culture itself changing. And of course, the world itself has changed significantly in the last, 40 or 50 years.
No kidding.
Even in the last 15. So I wonder how much of the issues that we're looking at, how many of these issues may in fact be a matter of not having really critically reevaluated what exactly it is we're teaching, the core curriculum, as it were.
So the curriculum itself that teachers are being handed is an issue. The teachers are an issue. The whole social structure outside the school is an issue. There's a lot on the table here. Let me bring in one more voice, if I may, from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Art Bardage joins us. He's president of Enable Learning, Inc. It's a company dedicated to promoting technology in education. He's got a new book coming out called New Physical Ideas Are Here Needed, Revolutionizing Education. Art Bardage, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Can we solve this with better teachers?
No, Tom, I think we can't. Unfortunately, I think that's the wrong way to think about the change that has to take place. We all want and need better teachers, but we can't get them.
Why not? We got a big country, 300 million people?
No, we got 300 million people. We have 3.5 million K-12 teachers. Let's just take math, Tom. 250,000 math teachers in 7 through 12 in the United States. And we tend to think of these people as the key people that teach math in from middle school on through high school.
Yeah.
We would expect the new teachers coming in, and we expect these teachers to have at least a bachelor's degree with a major in mathematics.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So if we figure let's say just for round numbers, a 10%, maybe a little bit less than 10% attrition rate. For teachers, yearly attrition rate. That means we need about 25,000 new teachers a year.
Okay.
In math.
Okay.
Alone. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, we only graduate 13,000 people with a bachelor's degree in mathematics. 13,000. A bachelor's degree in mathematics and statistics, of which if we really dream hard, maybe 10% will go into teaching. In other words, we're talking about 1,000 or 2,000 people who we can count on with a bachelor's degree in mathematics.
Never mind a teaching certificate.
Never mind a teaching certificate. Never mind a higher quality. Never mind a master's degree.
Wow. Tom Kane, what about, here's another set of numbers. Are the troops just not out there to funnel into the classroom?
Clearly we have a problem with troops, and the problem with troops is going to get a lot worse in the next few years, because the last large cohort of people entering teaching entered around 1968-69, and you can see that group moving through the snake, mm-hmm, and it's mm-hmm. about to come out the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the question should be, how do we solve this troop problem?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against technology, but I think it's a false distinction to pose these as alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, any technology is going to be more effective if you've got more effective teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And what we ought to be doing is lowering the threshold for starting and then raising the threshold for being able to remain. Now, what are the troops out there? I think so. look at in New York City, where they were recruiting teachers for the New York City Teaching Fellow Program. Mm-hmm. They got 16,000 applications for 1,600 slots. There are large education is this generation's civil rights issue. And there are large numbers of people out there who have been pursuing other careers that would be interested in trying to make a contribution in the classroom. And we just need to develop a system that makes room for those people and gives them a shot in the classroom, recognizes not all of them are going to stay long term, but we can get them in and support them while they're there, and then try to encourage the ones who are knocking it out of the park while they're there to stay.
So open the doors not just to new grads but to many others. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Art Bartage, how about it? Can you open the doors to the whole society and say, come on, this is, we heard our billionaire friend Eli Broad earlier saying, we've got to succeed in this to save the country. Come on in here, mathematicians, whatever your age, and help us out. Is that going to do it? Or if you're saying technology has to supplement, can it really? How?
Well, Tom, I think Tom Kane's ideas are terrific, but I'm afraid that a lot of it is wishful thinking. What we've done over the past 50 years in America is lower class size, and in that process, we've effectively doubled the number of teachers that we had per student, if you could say it that way.
Yeah, and that's expensive,
since 1960.
Right? Yep.
So what we've done is decrease the productivity of our teaching workforce. It really diluted it.
So can technology somehow make up the difference? What, you put a teacher with a computer and suddenly you've got the miracle?
Well, it's not suddenly you've got the miracle, but technology has increased our productivity enormously in America. Over the past, that same period, same 50 years, technology in almost every other area of America has increased our productivity by as much as 3 times.
So you're saying supplement good teachers with kind of a great material that comes down over the web and then maybe we've got a chance? That's your idea?
I think support good teachers. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even say supplement. I'm saying support good teachers with terrific new educational technology that is now coming forward. Mm. Technology that improves learning and helps students learn and helps give feedback to teachers about what students are learning and what they're doing.
It sounds like American innovation, Tom Kane.
But Art, wouldn't you agree that the best teachers are probably going to make the most use of that technology? That this is not, we shouldn't think of this as a way for making up for a supply. We should be saying, hey, look, we've got this resource, professional development, technology, whatever it is, rather than investing it in any teacher who happens to stay on the job for 2 or 3 years, why don't we invest those things in the teachers who've shown us in their first couple of years that they're most effective?
Art Bartage?
Well, I think, Tom, you know, I'd like to do that, but I also like to give it to everybody because I think it can make everybody more effective. I think technology, what we've seen in across America again and again and again, is that technology can enable people to do things that they never could do in the past. They can enable people who are fair at something to become very good at something. For example, I can now print my own photographs at home and make beautiful photographs where a photographer, Matthew Brady, needed a whole train of people and the great photographers needed dark rooms and assistants and brilliance. I can do all these things on the web today very easily. I think that we can do the same thing in education, that technology again and again and again has proven that not only can it increase productivity, not only can it make people more efficient, but it can make them more effective.
So bring it in to help. Art, our time is so short, I'm afraid that's all we've got, but thanks for being with us from Enable Learning, Inc. Tom Kane, last word goes to you. Art, thanks for being here. Tom, ears open to a new way here. What kind of reception are you getting?
I think that teachers' unions will learn that if they want to preserve tenure, that there's going to have to be a serious hurdle for earning that tenure. And actually, I think that tenure is a useful institution because it forces us to make a hard decision at the time. If we didn't have the tenure decision, it would actually, ironically, be harder to screen for the most
effective. But let's use it and really screen and get the best. Tom Kane at Harvard Graduate School of Education, thanks for being with us. This is On Point.